Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Guys in Ties podcast. I am Dustin, as usual, and then Rob is on the phone. Rob, how are you doing? How are you feeling? I saw you last weekend at the Notre Dame game. And we had some plans for some bonus content, but I got cold and sad, so I had to leave early. But how was your time in Charlottesville? How was the rest of the game?
Yeah, no, well, it was great to see you. Great to see the whole gang. We had a good little tailgate going. I mean, honestly, kind of a boring game. You know, as soon as those first couple series came through and you kind of realized Virginia was going to struggle to get anything really going on offense, you know, it just kind of played out how it did. 28-3, I don't think is really gives the full picture of how much Notre Dame kind of dominated that game. But yeah, we'll get into all that. You know, fun night nonetheless. Yeah, as much as it would have been fun and great to beat Notre Dame at the time, the number 17 in the country, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter all that much, at least as it comes down to the ACC Coastal race. So yeah, lots to talk about. Big game this weekend.
Yeah, and we'll get to that game all in due time. We are going to also talk basketball and how that's going as well. We won't give anything away as to how we feel about basketball right now. But before we do get into it all, I do want to talk about our sponsors from Symbol. We have a new sponsor that you guys are going to love. Symbol is the stock market for sports that allows you to profit off your sports knowledge. On Symbol, you can trade sports teams like stocks, and every time your team wins, you earn cash. Use your sports knowledge on Symbol to buy low, sell high, and earn cash payouts when your teams win. Join the nearly 7,000 early adopters who have started to invest in their favorite teams. Visit www.simbull.com to create a free account, and when you deposit, make sure to use promo code SD to make your deposit risk-free. That means even if you lose money, Symbol will refund your initial deposit, no questions asked. Join Symbol and start investing and profiting from your favorite teams. We are also sponsored by Spotify Green Room. Spotify Green Room is a live audio-only sports talk platform. You can talk to other fans, athletes, insiders in real time. Get in on the conversations that you listen to on your podcasts every day. All you need to do is download the Spotify Green Room app for free in the iOS App Store, create a profile, link your Twitter, and join whatever groups you want. Go ahead and download Spotify Green Room today.
UVA football is the softest bunch of cream puffs, bow tie wearing, brie cheese eating, NASCAR wearing wussies I've ever seen in my life. I'm going to punch people from UVA right in the neck. They wear suits to games. That's absurd.
So we just lamented a little bit about, you know, the football team losing to Notre Dame, and now we're going to lament more about the basketball team losing two out of the first three games. The most recent one, a throbbing defeat at the hands of the Houston Cougars, losing by 20, 67-47. Rob, you know, watching the first three basketball games over this season, how have you felt about this team going forward?
You know, that's the great question and the question that everyone's trying to answer right now. And, you know, we're really into the season. And I think, you know, myself included, I think everyone just kind of expects excellence consistently from this UVA basketball team. The reality is this team lost 6 of its top 8 scorers from last year. And the 2 scorers that did come back among those top 8, Reese Beekman and Kihei Clark, they're not exactly, you know, light you up shooters, light you up scorers or anything like that. Both good players in their own right. But, you know, neither of them is really bringing the scoring punch. So there's a lot that has to get replaced, you know, as far as shooting goes, as far as offensive rhythm goes. You know, the Beekman-Clark backcourt pairing was one that struggled at times last year, mm-hmm. just because, you know, they're both true point guards. Defensively, you know, I think there's great talent and potential still at the guard spots. And I think some of these 3-point shooting percentages for the opponents will come down, kind of revert back to the mean as the season goes on. But yeah, I mean, there's real struggles interior. You know, Caden Shedrick and Jaden Gardner, you know, kind of manning that 4 and 5 spot. They're, you know, not as natural and fluid as post big men defenders as Virginia has had in the past. So there's a lot of moving parts. You know, obviously Virginia is 1 and 2 right now. Strangely enough, the last time UVA started 1 and 2 was the 2012-2013 season, mm-hmm. which was the last season UVA did not make the NCAA tournament. Okay. So, you know, we're kind of doing a little deja vu right now. We'll see how it plays itself out. But yeah, there's a lot to work on. There's really no one area where it's like, oh, if they fix this, Virginia's in better shape. There's a lot to work on, and it's going to take some time to do so.
But I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you go for it. That's my little, like, introduction to what we've seen so far.
I was just going to say, you know, the offense has been pretty stagnant, and except against Radford. And Radford is, you know, beating Radford is nothing to write home about. And we beat Radford by 21. We lose to Houston by 20, lose to Navy by 8. And in all of those games, there's just times where the offense just doesn't get anything done. I mean, you look at the Navy loss, where basically for like almost a 10-minute stretch from I'm looking at the stats right now, from 8:45 in the second half left until 24 seconds left, we didn't score. That's crazy. That's insane. Against Navy, a team that didn't really play anyone that big, and you know, Navy's not a team that you look at and say like, oh, they're, you know, their defense is insane. No, I mean, it's Navy. Like, they're not a great team. Navy was also without 2 of its starting players. So that just goes to show you, like, this team can get really anemic, probably more so than in the past, with how it is with its scoring. And it's going to be a long year if we keep going like this and just have trouble scoring. You know, 47 points against Houston. Just not a lot there. The shooting percentages were bad. Franklin had the high amount of points with 11, which is a super low amount. We only had 6 assists on the night with 17 turnovers. I'm not sure I've ever seen a UVA team in recent years, especially under Tony Bennett, with just taking care of the ball that poorly, as well as not distributing the ball well at all. It's been frustrating, to say the least, over the first 3 games.
Yeah, and I mean, you say all of that, and I think such a big key to turning this season around, it's going to be, I mean, turning this season around, like, you know, we're 3 games in, but there's work to do, and it's pretty clear. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Virginia's lucky they're going to face a Coppin State team on Friday that currently is 1-5. So Virginia hopefully has a chance to turn, you know, get a little positive momentum on a Friday night game, much like they did last week against Radford. But no, I cut myself off. I was going to say, I feel like such a huge key to this season is really getting Armand Franklin going. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talked so much in the preseason, you know, what was going to be kind of the sophomore leap for Reese Beekman. You know, can Caden Shedrick make a similar type of sophomore leap? You know, Jaden Gardner, what is he going to do? But you know, I feel like Armand Franklin was a guy we didn't talk enough about. And mm-hmm. in a backcourt that features two point guards, neither of whom are great shooters, I think Armand Franklin's going to play a big role. You know, not only shooting, but the ability to get into the paint and score. And, you know, Reese Beekman has a couple successful drives against Houston. Kihei Clark really didn't have those successful drives against Houston. He was mm-hmm. blocked a few times. But, you know, having a guy like Jaden Gardner out there is going to be important because this team lacks shooting right now. And, you know, not only does it lack shooting in its backcourt, but it also lacks shooting in its frontcourt where it had shooting between Jay Huff, Sam Hauser, you know, Trey Murphy, if you want to bump him in there, the past couple of years. So, you know, there's just a lot to figure out right now. Now, I think one thing that, you know, is probably less of a concern right now than it typically is at this stage of the season is the rotation, because mm-hmm. we knew generally what the rotation was going to be coming into the season because the roster was so small. Now, you know, they're still probably figuring out exactly how they want to play it. But personally, I'm not really expecting any changes in the starting lineup. You know, maybe we'll see more minutes for Cody Statton in here, you know, maybe a little bit for Carson McCorkle there. I mean, I would say the only surprise of the season so far from a personnel standpoint is that Tane Murray, they seem to want to play him more as a blocker than as a mover, which mm-hmm. I find interesting. So anyway, you know, the rotation isn't as big a piece as maybe we thought it might be. But I think maximizing the talent and the chemistry of the guys on the court, you know, especially those that starting five, I think that's going to be the biggest challenge moving forward.
And you make a great point, right? Like, these guys really haven't played much together at all. Shedrick barely played last year. He was hurt and, you know, I think sick a lot of the time. Cody really didn't play a lot last year. You know, Cody got 20 minutes in the game against Houston. Actually looked pretty good at times, especially, you know, with his shooting, especially, you know, he only took five shots, but 3 of 5, 2 of 3 from 3-point range, 8 points, played some solid defense. You know, it wasn't great. I kind of call him he's like an Evan Nolte type where he just kind of knows where to be and he's pretty long and lengthy and athletic. So he can make up for, you know, his other, you know, lack of other things, I guess. That what I'm saying is, but he knows where to be in the defense, which is probably the most important thing about the pack line, is, you know, where to be, how to move, how to get in the passing lanes and all that kind of stuff. And so he can cause disruptions, but, you know, Gardner's new, Franklin's new. We've already discussed about how Kihei and Reese don't always mesh well together because they kind of do the same thing. You know, and, you know, just once again, you're talking about Franklin. He was cold again on Tuesday. He was 0-4 from 3. He did get fouled a lot. He was 5 of 6 from the free throw line and, you know, ended up with 11 points, which he was the only person who scored in double figures. So if he's not going, and if Reese is going to shoot 0 of 3, and if Kihei is going to shoot 2 of 6 from 3, it's just going to be a long night. And especially against a really athletic team like Houston, that, you know, Gardner couldn't get anything going. He only had 4 points on 1 of 4 shooting, 3 turnovers. It was just tough to watch, frankly. And I think most importantly, it's going to take time for this team to really gel together and figure out what they want to do, right? We saw Carson get 7 minutes, you know. A lot of people weren't sure that he was going to play a lot this season. Cafaro, Poppy, 23 minutes, 3 points on 3 of 6 from free throws. He didn't get any field goal attempts because he kept getting fouled. So it's just going to be interesting how this team ends up gelling and what the eventual lineup is going to look like.
Yeah, it's funny with Cafaro, actually. My brother and I were watching the game and they showed a stat at some point in the second half, and it's like Francisco Cafaro, 0 points, 2 fouls. It's just like, yeah, that's the night we're having. It's the second half.
Yeah.
I guess the question I would pose to you, and one that I admittedly don't have an answer for, is, you know, how do you think this team gels? And, you know, I say that you know, wondering, do you think this is a team that maybe Franklin gets going a little bit and maybe they find some shooting from McCorkle and they find some balance on the outside, or is it more so on the inside? Maybe they decide they're really able to lean on Gardner and Shedrick, and, you know, just basically play on the low block way more than Virginia teams recent years have. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think personally it's going to have to be a balance between the two. I don't see an obvious strength in either one of those spots, but I'm curious if you have a thought on, you know, where this team, what this team might look like once it's quote unquote gelled.
I mean, it's got to go, I really think it's got to go inside out. And I think it's got to start with Gardner. I think it's got to start with Shedrick. And, you know, if Cafaro can, like, kind of anchor, you know, whenever there's a big guy that Gardner or Shedrick can't guard, Cafaro's going to have to play big minutes, right? Like, Duke's got, what's his name? John, a big guy, all muscle. And, you know, Cafaro's going to have to play big minutes in those Duke games because there's no way Gardner can guard him, or Shedrick is, he'll get bullied down there. And so it's going to be interesting to see how he plays in. But, you know, Gardner shooting 1 of 4, 4 points, 3 turnovers, 2 rebounds. It's just, you know, he is an undersized 4. You know, he's, you know, as you said, Liz at 6'6", might be 6'5 on a good day in the building. He's big, though, and he can bully people around, but he needs a smaller person on him. And that wasn't going to happen with Houston. Shedrick, too. Shedrick had 10 points against Radford. All on free throws. He had 4 against Houston, and he had 3 blocks, but only 3 rebounds, and, you know, not much else to say. Only played 23 minutes. I think that when they gel, it's going to come more from those two figuring out their role and Gardner figuring out how to play against probably better defenders and bigger defenders than he's used to, and Shedrick realizing that he's more athletic than anyone else on the court and needs to do, you know, something to try and get some shots off, whether that's a mid-range, whether it's taking a baseline, offensive rebounds, really anything to get this team going. And then they, once they're focused on them, kick it out. And that's when Franklin, Beekman, Clark, Cody, McCorkle, even, you know, Tane Murray, that's when they have to start knocking down threes, because that's how we're going to win, is because the guard play right now, a little tough. You know, Reese Beekman goes 3 of 9. Kihei's 2 of 9 against Houston. They're just not able to get the shots that they want, especially against bigger teams. So if we can start inside out, I think that's where it really starts. So getting Gardner on board and really getting him moving, getting Shedrick, you know, pumped up and game ready, I think that's where the key is. Do you agree, or do you think it's more of a guard play?
I mean, I think there's more options kind of going inside out, like you said, mm-hmm. Shedrick and Gardner. I would say my concerns there are, you touched on both of them. As much as I love Gardner, he is undersized, mm-hmm. you know, 6'5", 6'6", whatever you want to peg him at, that's undersized. Yeah. And, you know, 246 pounds, like, he's absolutely a bully, but he's going to be going up against people that are, you know, also a bully, you know, with that type of build, but mm-hmm. are, you know, several inches to half a foot taller than him.
Yeah.
So it's just going to be a challenge for him. And, you know, I'm sure it's something he's faced his whole career. And I know it's something Williford has talked about, is just learning to play that way. I mean, Williford was kind of straight up, you know, he didn't get much interest coming out of high school, and why he ended up in East Carolina because of his size. Mm-hmm. And the reason teams were interested in him in the offseason when he transferred was because he showed he could play at that size. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think you just got to hope he figures that out at the ACC level. And Shedrick, you know, there's so much potential there, and there has been a lot of potential there for some time. Unfortunately, he's battled some injuries and some illnesses, but he's a guy that really does need to take the next step. Mm-hmm. So I think there's more potential, like you said, to kind of go inside out. It's just a matter of these guys being able to do it. I think it's probably more likely than asking the guards to all of a sudden become good shooters.
Yeah.
You know, Reese Beekman and Kihei Clark, you know, has a history. He can be good in stretches shooting. Reese Beekman, we've heard he's improved his shooting. We'll see how that plays out. And as our guest on the last episode, Andrew Benvenuto, has told me this week, shout out Andrew, you know, as good as Armaan Franklin was shooting the three last year, you know, he was 42% at Indiana. A lot of it was kind of streaky shooting nights. There'd be nights mm-hmm. where he'd be 1-for-7 and then nights where he'd be 4-for-6. You mm-hmm. know, it was kind of hot and cold on a game by game basis. So, yeah. you know, I'm not really expecting any of that to change. I think we have a large enough sample size in the backcourt at Virginia and elsewhere to have a decent feel. So the hope, I think, has got to be, you know, going from the inside out, like you said, Shedrick, Gardner, and I'm not expecting points from Cafaro necessarily, but yeah. even just being a better screener, being better defensively, or being mm-hmm. better on the glass, you know, those are the things that he needs to do. He needs to play the Jack Salt role. So anyway, I think that's where the greatest potential is, at least.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And I also want to point out, you know, this was a lot of people's first true away game since March of 2020, right? So it's been a year and a half. It's been a long time since they've been in front of a lot of fans, like in Houston, which, and you know, Houston's got a reputable basketball program now. They're just coming off a Final Four.
Houston's good. Yeah. Houston's very good.
Yeah. And they've got a great coach and they've got a good program. And, you know, there weren't a ton of fans there, but they were making noise and you could tell they were angry at some of the calls that they were getting. And, you know, they were really in on their team. Kind of felt like I love it. I love having fans back, but I bet it's tough for especially someone like, you know, Reese Beekman, who hasn't really played a lot in front of fans, and, you know, especially Gardner playing in front of, you know, fans for the first time in a long time since he's been at a new school and a bigger school. Same with Shedrick. It's been a while since he's played a lot of minutes, probably the most minutes he's ever played, and definitely the most minutes he's ever played in an away game in college. So I think that over time, we got to get used to it. You know, we're playing basketball again, real basketball with fans. It's going to take some time. The loss against Navy, you know, I at first thought it was kind of fluky. You know, Navy goes to a zone. We've clearly never seen a zone before in their life. They didn't know what to do. And Houston, just, we were clearly outmatched. And Houston is a great team. They're going to be good all season. It'll be nice to see over the next couple of games what we can do. You know, we've got Coppin State on Friday. We've got Georgia the next Monday, Lehigh the next Friday, and then Iowa the next Monday, kind of right after Thanksgiving. So that stretch, I think, is going to be really good. We've got some hopefully easy ones in Coppin State and Lehigh. We've got some tougher ones in Georgia and Iowa. And there's another one in there. It's not on the ESPN schedule, but we would play the winner of Northwestern and I think is it Providence?
That sounds right. I'm actually looking at ESPN too. So yeah. Anyway, there's going to be an opportunity in there.
Yeah. So we'll get another game in there. It's just going to be it. I'm hoping that, you know, the mix of home and neutral site, we can kind of get this offense going. Because the defense, I think, is fine, honestly. And we can talk about some individual defensive performances later. I've got some, you know, maybe some unanswerable questions for you, Rob, that we're going to get into in just a sec. But, like, you know, I'm just hoping that I think the offense, like, you know, we hold Radford to 52 points. That's very doable. Navy scored 66. Houston scored 67. That's a doable amount, right? And last year, no problem. Jay Huff, what's his face? Hauser and, you know, Trey Murphy, they can take care of 67 points. This team cannot. So I'm not yet, and I'm hoping that they can get there eventually. Rob, do you want to do this question exercise with me that I've just come up with?
Yeah, let's do it. You were explaining it to me a bit before we started recording. But feel free to give it another run through before we get started.
I started a little bit. What I did is against Navy, I was writing down some questions that I had to bring up with you. And we didn't get to it. We didn't do a pod last week, so weren't able to ask these questions. But I think it's interesting, you know, through three games, I think a lot of these questions still hold some water, and actually some of them have been answered. So I want to go through and ask them. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 now. 7 questions. And we'll spend a couple minutes on each of them. The first one is Gardner's defense. Even against Navy, I was noticing some times where Gardner was getting, you know, just shot over, kind of lost in the, not totally lost, but a little slow moving in the pack line defense. How do you think Gardner's defense can affect his playing time? I think against Houston it did. You know, he had some turnovers. Houston just had some really tall players. Gardner only played 24 minutes against Houston, which just seems weird for someone who's been our leading scorer through the first three games. And that includes his 4-point performance against Houston. So what do you think about Gardner's defense? Can it get better throughout the season?
I think it certainly can get better, and it will get better. I think it's a very interesting way you posed that question, because my initial reaction was that, you know, no, that yeah. his defense will not necessarily affect his playing time because he provides such a unique skill set. What I would say, though, is that depending on how Caden Shedrick, you know, progresses through the season, there could be times where Virginia chooses to go small, mm-hmm. where they play Cody Statman at the 4,
yep.
and maybe they put Caden Shedrick at the 5, and that leaves Jaden Gardner as the odd man out.
Mm-hmm.
So my initial reaction is that no, he's probably not going to lose playing time over defense. You know, at least to our perception, I'm sure Tony Bennett will have his fits about it in his own way. But I think there are scenarios where, you know, some games Jaden Gardner might play 35 minutes and other games he might play 25 minutes. I think that could be matchup based. So that's my hot take. What do you think?
I agree. I think Kafaro is going to steal some minutes. I mean, even Tane Murray, you know, we've seen get some minutes. He's, you know, technically should be a 3, maybe a stretch 4. And, you know, he and Gardner are very different players. Tane Murray and Jaden Gardner.
Yeah, for
super
sure.
Different. Completely opposite, basically. And Tane Murray wants to play outside in. Gardner wants to play inside at all times, not even step outside the paint. And I think it's just interesting how, you know, does his defense affect his playing against other teams? You know, like Duke, for example. We keep going back to Duke. With Paolo Banchero, you know, he's going to play the 4 against us. And do you think Gardner is going to be able to guard Banchero? I don't think so. I think we have to put Shedrick on him, which means that we probably have to go big against Duke or small, depending on who else Kay is putting in. So I think, you know, in a game like that, Gardner might be in for his offense, but on defense, he's going to get toasted. So, you know, what do you do with that? Do you take out Shedrick and put in Gafaro? Do you put Gardner? Do you put Cody at the 3 and try and hide Gardner somewhere in the defense? It's an interesting question, and I think it's going to be interesting to see over the next, especially a couple games, heading into through Thanksgiving, how they handle him.
Yeah, you know, when you said that, is it Banchero? I still haven't figured that out.
It's Banchero. Apparently.
Banchero, okay.
Yeah, I was listening to the broadcast on the first night of basketball. It's Banchero.
Got it. Well, that's good to know. You read so much about him, but I hadn't heard anyone pronounce his name yet, right. Honestly. But no, I mean, I would say the immediate thought that comes to mind is, you know, when we played Duke when they had Brandon Ingram, mm-hmm. and it took like a half, 30 minutes of basketball to finally figure out that Malcolm Brogdon was the best person to guard him.
Yeah.
So, and you know, that was when we had Anthony Gill. He struggled guarding mm-hmm. him and, you know, went through half the roster. Anyway, I think a lot of that is just going to be matchup based.
Yeah. No, I agree. So I think every game is probably going to be different. So unanswerable question. Will it get better? Probably not. Will he learn the pack line better? Probably. So that's my hope, is that the defense will get better, even though Gardner's defense doesn't get better. His understanding will get better, but he will still be smaller than everyone else. And you know, will have trouble guarding some taller players at times. Let's move on to the next question. How well can Cody shoot this season? I think this is actually a lot bigger than we thought, because we've seen Franklin is already a very streaky shooter, right? He's 0-4 against Houston, against Navy. You know, his 1-3 that he made at the very end, you know, doesn't even, I don't even count that. He was 1-7, really should have been 0-6. And against Radford, he, of course, was 5-8 from 3 and 7-12 from the field. So if Cody can come in and make a couple threes like he did against Houston, he was 2-3 for 3 against Houston, shooting 75% on the season. Of course, I think he's only taken 4 threes, but it, how much does Cody's shooting affect this team and affect, I think, his playing time as well?
I think that'll probably be the biggest key to his playing time, is his ability to shoot the ball. Now, Cody Statman, as you said, I think you're right. I think he's, I'm going through stats here. What I do know is that the best sample, basically, to get a feel for him is the 2019-2020 season, mm-hmm. where he started 8 games. I think he played in 24, if I'm not mistaken. Well, in that season, he shot 26.9%. Mm-hmm. So he actually started 10 games that year, played 24 overall. So he had his opportunities that season to really show himself as a shooter, and really didn't quite live up to the billing. Now, this year, you know, 2 years removed from that season, you know, he is 3-4 so far from 3. I don't think any of those have really been that contested, but, mm-hmm. you know, other people have missed open shots that we've had as well. So I think that's going to be the biggest key. I think when you look at Cody Statman, he's, I think the best way he can help this lineup as a small ball four, you know, yeah. I just think as playing the three guard, just at his height, you know, I just don't see it as much as I do the small ball four, especially considering he's really the only person we have that can play that kind of stretch four spot, mm-hmm. at least right now. So yeah, I think his ability to shoot will be very important, because if he doesn't show the ability to shoot consistently as the season progresses, you know, there might not be as much of a reason to take Jaden Gardner out of the game. So that's my take. How do you feel about it?
I think you're right. I think it goes, but also I think it goes back to Gardner's defense, right? Like if Gardner's not playing defense, Tony's always going to prioritize defense over offense, especially like even in the Houston game, right? Like McCorkle, you know, is always ready to fire off some shots, but you know, he got 7 minutes. So Tony is clearly trying to get the defense right, and I think this is true of every season, right? He wants the defense to get right before he starts tinkering with the offense at all. And you know, this team, you know, he's not ready to, you know, I think let go of the defense yet. I don't feel like the defense is ready yet. I don't think he feels like it is. I think this could be a very good defensive team, but they're still, you know, finding some gaps. And I think a lot of it has to do with that, you know, outrageous 3-point shooting that our, you know, opponents have been hitting, and, you know, hitting banked in threes and last second threes. And, you know, Navy had some wide open shots that they made too. So, you know, credit to Navy and Houston for making all their shots, but that's not sustainable throughout the season. And usually Virginia teams are very, very good at closing out on three, rebounding, and, you know, taking the ball up the floor. That's what we're known for. So once he gets that settled, I think then he starts tinkering with, okay, you know, Gardner doesn't fit well here, let's get Cody in. But I think defense is always his priority. So I think Cody could get minutes even if he's not shooting well. But I think if Cody can shoot well, it takes a lot more pressure off of, you know, Kihei to shoot or Reese to shoot. You know, Reese can do his own thing. Kihei can do his own thing. Maybe if Cody shoots better, we don't have to play Kihei and Reese at the same time. We can play one at a time and kind of switch them off. And, you know, I doubt that will ever happen, once again, because of defense. But it's a hope that we could all have that, you know, eventually we find some shooting on this team.
Yeah, and it can only come from one of so many places. If it comes from Cody Statman, he has the ability to do things as a stretch four, at least, that, you know, Tane Mary or Carson McCorkle, mm-hmm. the other two coming off the bench, do not have. So yeah. It would benefit UVA a lot if this 3-point shooting, I mean, if he could hover, you know, 35 to 40%, that'd be a big deal for UVA.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's move on. My next question was about rebounding against, and this was against Navy. We did not rebound well against Navy. We got out rebounded 35-30, and against Radford, we out rebounded them by 230-32. We got out rebounded by Houston 30-34. You know, is rebounding a problem this year? So far, Gardner is our top rebounder at 6.3 per game, but Kihei was our main rebounder against Houston. He had 6 rebounds against Houston. Like, is rebounding a problem? Usually for Virginia teams, we're pretty good on not allowing offensive rebounding. Is this something that we need to focus on more this season than in the past?
Yeah, I think rebounding could be a problem this year. And it's funny you wrote these questions against Navy, because I really started to think that against Houston. Mm-hmm. You know, there were just several instances where, you know, Virginia would be in position and they weren't able to secure the ball, or maybe they weren't in position at all. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Houston was able to get kind of that Isaiah Wilkins type tip back to the guards and able to secure the rebound. So,
mom tip.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think rebounding could be an issue. I think, you know, when I look at this team, I'd love to see Jaden Gardner be a bit stronger of a rebounder. Mm-hmm. But, you know, rebounding never really truly only comes from the guards. It's really got to come from the big men.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's an area where so much of it is just fundamentals, you know. And I say that as like a guy who's terrible at basketball my entire life. But, you know, we've seen people get better as rebounders under Tony Bennett. You know, Kyle Guy immediately comes to mind. For a smaller guy, mm-hmm. he became a very good rebounder. Mm-hmm. Sam Hauser progressed very, very well as a rebounder as last year went on. Became very solid after some early season struggles. So it's something that can be learned, and I think Gardner will get the hang of it with his physicality. And I think there's no reason to think Shedrick should not be able to do the same. But yeah, I do have a little bit of concerns about rebounding right now.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a lot of valid concerns. Gardner, you know, we keep bringing up Gardner, but I think he's really the key to this season. I said that at the, you know, before the season started, is, you know, we need Gardner to really be a really key component of this team. He's here for a year. Does he really have another?
He could be here for 2.
He could be.
If he wanted to. He has a COVID year.
That's true. And so anyway, but, you know, he's right now our points leader and our rebounding leader. But I feel like, you know, and he had a double-double against Navy. He had 8 rebounds against Radford. You know, can he be a really solid rebounder? And I think we need that. And I think we really need, you know, Shedrick to step up as well. We need, you know, we've got undersized guards like Reese and Kihei, you know, and for his size, Kihei's a pretty good rebounder. But I think we just need a little bit more, and maybe from Franklin, but to, you know, just stop the offensive rebounding. It was especially a problem against Navy. It was very, very clear. I think it got a little bit better, but, you know, just kind of a weird situation where we're giving up a lot of offensive rebounds to teams that we probably shouldn't. We gave up 11 offensive rebounds to Radford. We gave up 10 to Navy and 10 to Houston. So that's a lot. That's a lot of offensive rebounding for a team, for Virginia, that is typically known. And, you know, you can hear all the broadcasters, Billis, you know, Billis especially says this, but defensive rebounding is like a huge thing for UVA, and we don't allow offensive rebounding to happen generally. So having all 3 teams so far be in double digits for offensive rebounds, super problematic, giving them a lot of extra chances. And that's what won Navy the game, I think. I'm not saying that's what won Houston the game, but it's definitely, you know, definitely didn't hurt. And Radford, you know, they got blown out, but they had 11 offensive rebounds and 19 defensive rebounds. They were very close in that. So it's kind of embarrassing that we, not embarrassing, but it's just, I think, a problem that we can't get the rebounds that we need to.
I mean, certainly could come back to bite us in some games. Again, I think this is something that'll get cleaned up. You know, I kind of like defense, you know, Virginia is always, whether they're up to Tony Bennett standards or not, they're always going to be a pretty good defensive team. And, you know, there's no reason to think Virginia shouldn't always be a pretty good rebounding team either. I think it'll be something that improves as the season progresses, but, you know, just early season games, you know, if Virginia is in a tight one against Georgia or Iowa or, you know, someone like that, you know, maybe that does come back to bite them a little bit, you know, at least in the early part of the season.
Yeah. All right. Next question. Will we ever defend the 3-point shot this season? And this was against Navy. It clearly against Houston, we did not defend that well. Against Radford, you know, they shot 6 of 20 from three. So I don't know if Radford's any good at shooting the three, but, you know, clearly this has been a problem in our two losses this season. Shooting, you know, Navy shot 11 of 21. It's 52.4%. Houston shot 11 of 20, 55%. We just can't win if we let teams shoot over us like that. You know, we're a team that likes to guard the three really tough. We want to make you make tough mid-range shots, kind of get you trapped in the middle, steal passes. But they've been making all their threes. So how does this affect our defense? Is it, you know, I think this is something that can be corrected. Do you think that this is hopefully going to go back to, you know, back to the norm, or is this going to be a problem all season?
Yeah, law of large numbers. It's all going to regress back to the mean. And
right.
In Virginia's case, I think they'll get back on track, well above the mean as well. It's funny, speaking of Andrew, I was actually giving him a hard time this week because he had told us on our podcast Virginia's 3-point defense was going to be elite. And currently, Virginia is 343rd out of 358 teams in college basketball in 3-point defense.
Before you move on, who is worse than us at 3-point defense?
I'm just reading the tweet. I do not have the stat in front of me.
Okay.
But,
hold on.
I can look into that. Give me a few minutes here and I'll let you know.
Okay.
But yeah, Virginia is allowing 45.9%. From three for their opponents. So it's rough, but listen, you know, it's all going to come back to the mean. I don't see any reason why Virginia shouldn't be much better in this category. And you know, I understand that maybe they even haven't been playing the best shooting teams in the world, but you know, I think at the end of the day, you just kind of have to trust numbers, trust trends, and also trust the talent that's on this team too. You know, Kihei Clark, Reese Beekman, and even to an extent, Armon Franklin are good perimeter defenders.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not concerned about this moving forward.
Yeah. No. Okay. That's a nice way of thinking about it. You know, just you're a numbers guy. I'm an emotions guy. I feel like it will never go back down, but you know, hopefully it will. I think you're right. Okay. Let's move on. This was an interesting question, and I was thinking this during Navy. I think I have my answer, but. Best defender on the team right now, is it Reese or is it Caden?
Reese Beekman.
Yeah.
Not a second thought there. What do you think?
No, I agree. It's Reese all the way. What Reese has shown us over the past two games has been nothing short of incredible for what he can do on the ball. He's leading the team with 3.7 steals per game. He only had one against Houston. So he is doing really well on ball defense. He's deflecting passes. He's taking it down the court himself. He can do it all. I think he can guard probably 1 through 3. I think he would have a tough time guarding a four spot or a five, but you know, because he's not as tall or as big as Malcolm was. So Malcolm could truly guard 1 through 5, I think. But you know, Reese Beekman, incredible defender. Probably the best hands I've seen out of anyone on a UVA team ever.
Yeah, I mean, I think he has the potential to go down as really an elite UVA defender.
Yeah.
Doesn't quite have the size as Brogdon. Mm-hmm. So, like you said, he probably won't be able to slide down and guard a Brandon Ingram type. But, yeah, I mean, I think he's a very, very elite defender. Real quick, going back to the stat we just talked about before.
Okay.
As we know, there's so many college basketball games going on at any given time. The stat has actually shifted 3-point defense Not in Virginia's favor. Currently, Virginia sits at number 346 out of 350 teams in three-point defense. The teams below them are St. Joseph's, Delaware, Mississippi Valley, and Farley Dickinson. And final fun stat of the night, the team that actually leads the country in three-point defense currently is the Virginia Tech Hokies.
Oh, gosh. Oh, that's awful. You didn't have to tell me that. That just makes everything much worse.
It's rough, man.
That's terrible. Oh my gosh. Anyway, Reese Beekman, we could use some 3-point defense from Reese Beekman. I think he's been fine. I think he's been fantastic so far on ball. I agree. Caden is also great. Caden can guard. I think Caden can actually guard more people. I think he can guard 2 through 5 probably, like really effectively. And you know, he can block any ball in the building. I think Reese is more versatile, though, in the way that he can deflect passes and move his feet. He just doesn't let anyone in front of him.
Yeah, no, I agree with that take. Yep.
I want to preface the next question by saying that I answered it already during the Navy game. So I think during the Navy game, Kihei made 2 threes in a row. And I wrote down, is Kihei automatic from three? And I immediately answered no in all caps, two caps for no. You know, he's shooting 31.3% from three this season, 100% from free throws so far, 30.8% from field goals. That Houston game really did him dirty. He's just against teams that have good shot blocking ability, it's just tough for him to get shots up in the paint.
Yeah, I mean, he struggles against size, and we've known this, and it just kind of is part of his game. So, no, I don't think Kihei is automatic.
No, I agree. I think that was a silly question.
We'll see. I will say I'm hopeful he can get his three-point shot percentage up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Going back and forth as I say this, I'd love for him to approach 40%. I don't think that'll really happen. But at the same time, you know, I think if he's in that 35 to 40% range, mm-hmm. I think that'll help Virginia a lot.
I agree. Right now at 30, you know, it's not quite enough and the volume's not there either. And especially, you know, if he can start shooting well, people will have to guard him a little bit farther out, creates more room for him to distribute or, you know, get to the basket. Just makes the whole team a lot better. So I hope he can get it up, and you know we'll see how it goes over the course of the season. You know, hopefully he gets better and more comfortable. But from what we've seen, you know, 30% is pretty much where he's been at. You know, all 3 years in the past. So you know this is pretty standard for Kihei so far. So we'll see if it gets any better over the season. But you know, hopefully it does. And if not, you know, it's just kind of where we've been. And that's all the questions I've had for basketball. Rob, any last thoughts on basketball? Anything we didn't cover?
No, actually, I think we did a pretty good job covering everything.
I think so too.
Nothing that I have to add. I think just the continuous development of the starting five and their ability to play together, mm-hmm. That's really what I'm looking for the next, call it, couple games at least until we record next.
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree. Next up, we're going to talk about football. But before we do that, I do want to talk about our sponsors from Symbol. Symbol is the sport stock market that allows you to profit off your sports knowledge. There are two ways to make money on Symbol. First, every time a team you own wins, you earn a cash win payout. Second, just like the stock market, if you think a team is going to increase in value, you can buy low and sell high for a profit. Use promo code SD to make your first deposit risk-free. That means even if you lose money or just decide the market isn't for you, Symbol will refund your initial deposit, no questions asked. Go ahead and download Symbol. Visit Symbol today. Use promo code SD to make your first deposit risk-free. We're also sponsored by Spotify Green Room. Spotify Green Room is a live audio only sports talking platform. It is free to download and free to use. You can talk to other fans, athletes, and insiders in real time. It's perfect for watch parties, debates, post game breakdowns, and reacting to breaking news. Go ahead and download Spotify Green Room app for free in the iOS App Store. All you need to do is create a profile, link your Twitter, and join whatever groups you want. Go ahead and download Spotify Green Room today.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
So let's go ahead and talk some football. We talk for basketball for 45 minutes, so that's pretty good, pretty standard for us. But let's go ahead and knock this football out. And Rob, we've got a big game coming up against Pitt at Pitt on Saturday. What time is the game at?
3:30.
Is it on ACC Network?
It is on, I don't know the question of that. Actually, I think it's on ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN2.
Oh, that's pretty good.
No, I mean, we forget, you know, in the midst of this Brennan Armstrong injury and kind of the previous two losses, but this is actually a really, really big game.
Yeah, it is. You know, we technically control our destiny in the Coastal Division. We beat Pitt and Virginia Tech. We're in. Actually, I think if we beat Pitt, we would have to beat Pitt and Virginia Tech to win the Coastal.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's a big thing, right? And so that was kind of this team's goal for the whole season. I think that was kind of the message that came out of the Notre Dame loss is like, hey, you know, our goal right now is to win the Coastal, win the ACC. Do you think that's possible right now? Like, just based on what you've seen so far from this team?
I mean, it's possible. It's just so hard right now, not knowing whether or not Brennan Armstrong will play. And if he does play, you know, at what percentage will he be? You know, wouldn't expect it to be 100%. And honestly, I really wouldn't expect any designed runs for him in the game plan either. But, you know, certainly having him available to play would be huge. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to really say, you know, with that so much up in the air. I think Pittsburgh is a team that, you know, really was flying high. I've kind of come back down to earth a little bit. They lose to Miami. They get kind of, you know, they played well against UNC at times, although they did kind of get lucky in overtime as far as when the rain started to come. So they were able to beat UNC in overtime last weekend. But Pittsburgh's offense is really good, man. I mean, you know, as much as I may hate to not Kenny Pickett, I mean, Kenny Pickett's numbers are really amazing this season. You know, he's thrown for 3,517 yards, completing 67.5% of his passes, 32 touchdowns to 4 interceptions. I mean, the Pitt offense as a whole is second in the country in total offense. Virginia is number 5, but Pitt is number 2.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Pitt's a really good team in at Heinz Field. You know, Virginia was able to win in 2019, really over 2 years ago. That was the season opener for that year. So, I mean, there's a blueprint to kind of getting things done there. But yeah, man, I mean, Virginia Tech with the interim coach, you know, that game is always tough, but maybe a bit more winnable now than it was with Fuente still there. But yeah, man, I mean, Pitt's a tough challenge without question. I think it's possible, but I think it's going to be difficult. That's probably the best way to put it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and we really haven't heard anything about Armstrong yet, have we? I mean, do you think that the coaching staff is going to keep this a secret until, you know, an hour before kickoff, when, you know, when we see that, you know, kind of like on Saturday when we were tailgating and then we get all these pictures of all the quarterbacks except for Brennan on the field, and we're like, well, crap, he's either not playing or he's getting like shot up with as many pain meds as they're allowed to give a living human. So, and you know, clearly he didn't play, but you know, it's been, you know, just crazy how you know, they kept it silent for so long, and a lot of people thought he would play just because we were on ABC, and you know, there's rumors about leakage to ABC and ESPN about like, oh, he's going to play. But, you know, clearly he didn't. And clearly they were trying to save him and get him ready for Pittsburgh and Virginia Tech the week after. If Armstrong doesn't play, what are our chances? Because we didn't look great against Notre Dame. Clearly the offense is not the same with Wolfolk. Not to knock Wolfolk at all, you know, it's tough to come in as a freshman, first start against a top 10 team on national television. That's just tough. And, you know, he didn't look terrible. 2 picks and, you know, no touchdowns. But it was a tough night for the offense. Now, if Brennan doesn't play again, does it look any different than that?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of points to make in answering that question. I would say, one, as you kind of said, you know, I'm not going to knock Jay Wolfolk at all. You know, I think he struggled a little bit, but who wouldn't? You know, first career start as a true freshman against a top 10 team. And, you know, I think my biggest takeaway for him is that the moment really didn't look too big for him. Like, yeah, he struggled. Yeah, he was processing things slower. But we've seen a lot of UVA quarterbacks, you know, over our lifetime, you know, marching out on the field, and you can kind of get a feel for, you know, who seems like they kind of have happy feet, who just doesn't look comfortable back there, and who does. And I think Jay Wolfolk certainly did. And, you know, I'm excited about his future at UVA. The next point, though, I was going to say is that it's kind of interesting that they really didn't adjust the offense at all for Jay Wolfolk. It was almost like they were just hoping Jay Wolfolk could run the same offense for 2 weeks in practice, and then Brennan Armstrong would be good to go in the game, and he'd just come in and go. And, you know, they really didn't do that. I mean, Wolfolk threw for 33 attempts, you know, which is fewer than Brennan Armstrong has done before, admittedly, but a lot of them were just shotgun snaps. You know, he's the only person in the backfield, instead of really designing a game plan that emphasized the run. And it didn't even have to be the traditional ground game, but if they wanted to run Keaton Thompson more, run Wolfolk more for that matter, you know, it just didn't really seem like the game plan was tilted in his favor. So anyway, you know, it's gonna look different, I think, this week. You know, I would, whether it's Wolfolk or Armstrong, my guess is that they try to go to the ground game a bit more. You know, another interesting thing here is that Wolfolk took 7 sacks, I believe, against Notre Dame. Pittsburgh is actually number 3 in the country in sacks. They average 3.6 sacks per game, 36 total on the season. So that's something to keep an eye out for. So, yeah, I mean, Virginia, there's a path, I think, to winning. I think it involves a much more balanced offense. But, yeah, I mean, it's going to have to look probably a little bit different than it did against Notre Dame.
Yeah, Yeah, and you know, I just Notre Dame, and you know, for Jay Wolfolk, like, once again, props to him for stepping in and doing as much as he could against a top 10 team, and not just a top 10 team, a Notre Dame who is a team that is just historically, you know, when you think of college football, you know, Alabama, not this year, Clemson, Ohio State, Notre Dame's always up there with all those teams, USC, but Notre Dame is a historically one of the best college football programs ever, and to start a game against Notre Dame has to be, you know, one of the toughest things you could probably do in a game, as well as, you know, come in the fourth quarter against BYU, a mile up from sea level. So, you know, a tough two first games for Wolfolk, but, you know, against Pitt, I think it also really just comes down to our defense and how does our defense respond to you know, the thrashing that they took against BYU and just kind of, I mean, they did fine against Notre Dame. I really feel like Notre Dame kind of called the dogs off after the first half. They were just kind of like, okay, we'll just take our 28 points and go.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question they took their foot off the pedal. And, you know, like, even at the end when they were trying to score on the goal line, you know, I think they were on, like, the 5 or 10 yard line. They fumbled the ball, and that helped UVA. So, yeah, I mean, this game could have easily been a much bigger blowout. You know, 28-3, they could have easily scored at least two more touchdowns, I think, safely. And, I mean, then you're talking 42-3, and that's all of a sudden doesn't look nearly as good on paper. Mm-hmm. Listen, I mean, I think UVA defense has, again, they've made incremental strides throughout the season, but it's been small and it's been slow. And I think the biggest struggle I see, you know, I felt for the most part, the gap integrity has gotten a lot better as the season has progressed. But, you know, against Notre Dame, there were just so many missed tackles. Now, you can blame that maybe on physicality, that Notre Dame just has athletes that UVA doesn't. And, you know, that's probably part of the case. Mm-hmm. I think another part of the case is that these guys are still learning this defense. And when you're thinking more than you should be, you're going to play slower. And it probably means you're just not bringing that same level of intensity to the tackle. You know, you can dissect this all you want. The bottom line is that, you know, if UVA wants to beat Pittsburgh, it kind of has to continue the strides it's made schematically, but it really just has to improve in tackling. And yeah, I think they can do that. You know, it's, you know, it's one of those things that can't really be taught. You know, you can teach angles, but at the end of the day, your guy just has to bring him to the ground. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my hope is that that'll improve. But yeah, I mean, that's a big part of the defense, you know, that maybe so many other things were going wrong earlier in the season that we just kind of glossed over that part. But yeah, against Notre Dame, the tackling woes really showed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, the same thing for the, you know, game against BYU as well. The tackling was awful.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we just were not great at tackling. So if we can't tackle like that against Pitt, it's going to be a long night, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I mean, one more thing on the defense is, you know, it was kind of like this last year in the secondary, and this year it's kind of been like this both in the secondary and at linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
It's just there's not really a set rotation, and there's not really guys that have really distinguished themselves and, you know, said that I'm the guy, you cannot take me off the field.
Mm-hmm.
Now at linebacker, that's Nick Jackson and Noah Taylor to an extent. I understand he's kind of battling some injuries. But that third linebacker spot, I mean, it started the year as Elliott Brown, and then it was Hunter Stewart for a bit. Then we've seen Josh Ahern. We've seen Wes Weeks. You know, they're just rotating so many people in at linebacker. You know, even Mike Green and Deshaun Perry. And then in the secondary, you know, the corners have remained relatively consistent, you know, especially Anthony Johnson at one corner spot. Joey Blunt is kind of locking down that middle safety role. But the other two safeties have rotated a lot. Unfortunately, Devontae Cross's UVA career is over. He had a season-ending injury.
Mm-hmm.
But he had played those safety spots. I mean, Cohen King had played there. Antonio Clary, Jonas Sanker. Like, they're just rotating so many guys. And it's the same thing they did last year in the secondary, especially at safety. They just kept rotating so many guys, which just tells me this team is still kind of searching for itself. And, you know, we're almost, you know, we're coming up on the 11th game of the season, you know, almost through the season, and they just really haven't found a rhythm there. So, anyway, I figured I'd point that out just because this defense is still very much in transition. And I think it's in transition from the coaches understanding the scheme and how the personnel can execute it. And also just from the standpoint that, you know, the personnel is just, they just haven't had consistency yet, yeah. I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm hopeful that we can, you know, find, you know, I don't know why I'm thinking it's going to happen against Pitt, but if there's any time in the season to get it done, it's now. And, you know, we just really got to make sure that we do the best that we can, because, you know, Pitt's got a great offense. We've got a great offense with Brennan Armstrong. We do not have a great offense when Brennan is not part of the equation. And so if we have any chance to win this game, our defense has to step up, and the defense has to do something to try and, you know, get this done.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a big part of it. And, you know, like you said, both sides, whether or not the offense is, you know, able to take that next step, whether or not Brennan plays or not, or and on the defense. And I think it's interesting and honestly almost unfair to the offense. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been a lot of stories out this week, and that the coaches have been telling the offensive players, like, hey, listen, without Brennan Armstrong, you need to be better, you need to do more, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that they've designed this offense around a really, really good quarterback. But Brennan Armstrong was just asked to do so much. And, like, I almost feel like it's unfair reading these articles, like, you know, not to call out coaches or anything, that they're doing anything wrong, but, like, Hagan's telling the receivers they need to be better and do more. And it's like, mm-hmm. Well, Dontayvion Wicks has been amazing this year. Like, Rashawn Henry has been good. You know, Billy Kemp, Keaton Thompson, like, all these guys have been amazing. And then, like, the thought that, like, the offensive line needs to be better. And, yeah, you know, you can't give up 7 sacks, but a lot of those were on the quarterback just taking a bit too long processing. So, yeah. You know, the whole equation just gets kind of thrown off. And it's more so the case when you're just asking your quarterback, Brennan Armstrong, to do so much. And he certainly can. And, you know, I don't necessarily, like, have any, like, complaints or anything with the fact that that was how the offense was designed. But mm-hmm. It's the risk you run. You know, when you put so much on one player, even a player as great as Brennan Armstrong has proven to be, you know, there's a risk there that when he's not in the game or he's not able to go, you know, that's kind of what happens. And yeah. You also are just putting him at an increased injury risk when you ask him to do so much. Yeah. So anyway, there's so many sides to that. But yeah, you know, I think the Virginia offense, they're going to have to find a way to do something more. And, mm-hmm. You know, if Jay Woolfolk is playing, I would expect changes. Like I said, I would expect more ground game one way or another. I'd expect shorter passes. You know, maybe he's not dropping back and reading the entire field. Maybe he's just has a quick route over the middle or a quick out route, you know, kind of like we saw with Bryce Perkins earlier in his career. We'll see how it plays out. But I think it's a good point you made. There's just so many different sides to this now without Brennan Armstrong, potentially without Brennan Armstrong.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just, you know, it's tough to, I would really hate his season to end like this, where he's had such a great season, but the season will be remembered for, you know, not being able to finish it, or, you know, having the Coastal in our grasp, but not being able to get past, you know, Pitt, and just having what could have been, and just all of that. So I think if Brennan doesn't play and we lose to Pitt, I think it's going to be more of a what if situation. And yeah, I feel bad for Brennan, because he's done so well this season, and honestly should be getting more attention for, I think, the Heisman than he is. But of course, missing the game, getting hurt against BYU, and not being able to win that game, and having a defense that's unable to stop anything, is just really, it's been unfortunate. So I'm hopeful that he can come back and we can win the Coastal. But if he doesn't come back this week, I'm afraid of what happens at Pitt if he doesn't come back.
Yeah, I mean, I echo the same sentiments you have there. Think about it. Like, if everyone was healthy, and everyone, I guess, really just Brennan Armstrong, although I hope Billy Kemp is also able to play. Mm-hmm. He left Notre Dame with what appeared to be a knee injury. ESPN would be all over this, man. Like, Coastal clash, you know, whoever wins, basically, if Pitt wins, they lock up the Coastal. If Virginia wins, then they have to beat Virginia Tech. But major Coastal implications, two of the best offenses in the country, two of the best quarterbacks in the country. Yeah, I mean, it's just a shame that this late season matchup is kind of marred by this Brennan Armstrong injury.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is the way it is. You know, there's only so much you can do about it. As we kind of said at the beginning, like, you almost like forget how significant this game is, because this is a huge game. Like, this is, I saw a thread on Twitter, like, is this the second biggest game of the Bronco Mendenhall era at UVA? Like, second biggest ACC game, potentially. I would say the Virginia Tech 2019 game is a no-brainer for one. But, yeah, I mean, this has the potential to be a really, really big game for UVA. Yeah. It's just a shame that the injury is clouding all of that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been tough. So, you know, we've got Pitt on Saturday, we've got Tech the next Saturday after Thanksgiving. And that's going to be our season. We'll be invited to a bowl game. We've got 6 wins, which is great. And, you know, Rob, maybe one word to describe how you're feeling about the rest of the season before we wrap it up.
It's a good one. I don't know, wary, maybe. Mm-hmm. You know, Virginia was 6-2, 6-3 going into the bye. It'd be a shame if Virginia slips, and, you know, if they finish the season 6-6, so be it. I'd love to beat Tech. I'd love to beat Pittsburgh, but I feel like there's a big difference between 8-4 and then 7-5. And then 6-6, you know, 8-4 is like everything goes great. You know, 7-5 is, hey, we had a winning season, and that 7th win, probably a better chance it comes against Tech than Pittsburgh. So, you know, beating Tech would be great. Finish with a winning season, okay. 6-6 just doesn't have as exciting a feel to it. So anyway, I don't want to define the season necessarily in the next 2 games, but these are probably the 2 biggest games of the season coming up. So I'm just hopeful Virginia is able to find an answer. And that answer is probably just going to have to be Brennan Armstrong, whether or not he can go. So anyway, I guess we'll see how these next few games play out.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting. So, you know, this has been a long pod, a lot of it on basketball, some on football, not all of it great. We have some hopefulness though. So not all hope is lost. Basketball can't. There is a long season left in basketball and football. It's almost over, but Tech fired their coach, which is hilarious. And I think it's just really funny they did it after a win as well. I wonder what the stats are about coaches being fired in the middle of a season after a loss or after a win. And I bet it's not in favor of the coaches who win a game and then get fired.
Yeah, I don't think so. I'm in Roanoke, so Tech country. It's been interesting to hear a lot of the takes that have come out. It's from Virginia Tech's standpoint, it's a shame it didn't work out with Fuente. You know, he seemed like the home run hire. Mm-hmm. You remember he was hired the same cycle as Bronco Mendenhall.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Mendenhall hire was kind of glossed over while the Fuente hire was considered the home run. And, you know, they actually had very similar win-loss records, although, you know, there's kind of different circumstances around each of those. It's interesting how it all played out. I'm very curious to see what type of coach Virginia Tech gets. Personally, I feel like, you know, they don't pay their assistants as much as most other schools do. Now you're 6 years removed from the Frank Beamer allure. Mm-hmm. So maybe that plays a role and it not being as high profile a job. Anyway, we'll see. But yeah, it is kind of interesting to hear all these things that are coming out now.
So I hope that makes the game on after Thanksgiving easier. My guess is that it won't matter at all, and that it will probably be really close, and we will probably lose because that's what we always do, and it'll just be normal life all over again, and we get to hear about it for the rest of the year, as well as having Tech have a better basketball team than us for the rest of the year, too. So that's going to be a fun year. In any case, I hope that y'all have enjoyed listening to us rant for about an hour and 10 minutes or so. Appreciate everyone listening. This is the Guys and Ties podcast. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Guys and Ties Pod. Go ahead and follow us on Snapchat and Instagram at Guys and Ties Pod for any bonus content that we promise but don't always deliver on. And you can follow us on Instagram and Spotify and iTunes if you like what you hear. And we will see you guys next time. Go Hoos.
Go Hoos.